Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back, friends, to another Waypoint article read. I'm Rab Zachney, and it's been a little while since we've done one of these. But today I'm bringing you Patrick Klepek and his piece on a leading Counter-Strike personality, Duncan Thorin Shields, who recently revealed that he's a huge fan of Alex Jones. That's the impetus for Patrick's piece, but more than that, Patrick is looking at Shields from an outsider's perspective and trying to parse how Thorin has remained such a major figure in esports, despite a long track record of provocative behavior and racist jokes. Anyway, here's Patrick with one of Counter-Strike's leading analysts wants you to know Alex Jones rules. We'll be back after the reading to discuss his article, the reaction to it, and Patrick's own history as a college edgelord.
Two things. The article on the website has numerous references to homophobic and racial and ableist slurs. I have taken those out and substituted those words for different phrasing in this version of the story. In addition, there are a number of embedded tweets in the story that I'm not going to read out here. So if you want the complete picture, you can go to waypointadvice.com and see the entire piece. With that said, I don't closely follow the competitive scene for any one game, instead relying on the expertise of others to guide me through this rapidly changing world. This means I follow dozens of reporters embedded in esports, and I quickly saw chattering about recent tweets by one person, longtime Counter-Strike global offensive analyst Duncan Thorin Shields. Some recent tweets, undersells what Thorin was saying, a full-throated defense of the conspiracy theorist Alex Jones, who spent years peddling a lie that 2012 Sandy Hook mass shooting, where 20 children between the ages of 6 and 7 years old died, was an elaborate false flag operation by the government, and the grieving parents were crisis actors. Just a few days ago, Thorin, a self-professed historian of esports, and a 2017 Esports Industry Awards Journalist of the Year, announced he would be a paid commentator at ESL New York, a massive esports event for Counter-Strike. Thorin isn't just some random Twitch or YouTube personality playing around with fringe rhetoric. Instead, major elements of the mainstream infrastructure of esports are not just propping him up, but paying him. And we're not just talking about a handful of edgelordy comments about Alex Jones. The hole goes deeper. After tweeting about Thorin, I was flooded with people pointing out how these types of antics were nothing new, and if anything, represented a less extreme version of himself. It didn't take much sleuthing to find what people were talking about, as it was sitting out in the open, like the time he affirmed the hurtful stereotype comparing black people to monkeys. This is far from the only racist commentary by Thorin, either. In response to a joking tweet where someone asked, "Who let the monkeys in the studio?" Thorin dropped a comment referencing Luminosity, a multi-game esports organization with Brazilian Counter-Strike team, and monkey is a known racial slur for dark-skinned Brazilians. The reaction to Thorin's tweet was swift, with people labeling the tweets as racist. Thorin later issued an apology, saying his joke was too much and didn't want to encourage hate for Luminosity. Thorin follows a familiar pattern for edgelord commentary. Step right up to the edge and walk away, leaving enough ambiguity in place so you can deploy a rhetorical smokescreen when you've accidentally gone over the line. With Luminosity, a situation where even his fans seem to acknowledge the implicit racism, Thorin doesn't actually admit to any racial connotations, conveniently leveraging the argument that people don't understand his humor. But sometimes the veil drops, if only by accident. In a 2014 podcast, Thorin derogatorily referred to Andy Reginald Dinh, an American League of Legends player of Vietnamese descent, as the ape Caesar from the movie Planet of the Apes. Quote, "If this is Planet of the Apes, he's Caesar," Thorin laughs. "I have to go there, whatever. You know how I do that shit." As he explained later, he definitely wasn't referring to a common racist insult that was thrown at Dinh in the League of Legends community at the time. He's only suggesting that in a hypothetical scenario where everyone on this podcast was from Planet of the Apes, Dinh would be Caesar. Quote, "The reason I picked that particular character," he said, "is that in the spur of the moment, it fit well with the characteristics I was listing and conjuring up, an image of around Reginald. Sounds a lot like a heated gaming moment, huh? In other words, Thorin's track record of comparing darker-skinned people to monkeys is nothing more than a coincidence, and social justice warriors trying to politicize everything. You'll find plenty of SJW grumbling on his Twitter feed. But it's the second quote, "I have to go there, whatever. You know how I do this shit." That reveals what's truly going on. It makes clear Thorin knows precisely what he's suggesting. Again, he admitted as much in the same essay. Quote, "That it," my Planet of the Apes comment, "flirted with, without expressly stating, a connection to a community joke about Reginald's appearance, was a bonus." Thorin's incendiary comments go beyond race, too. Earlier this year, he defended the right for Counter-Strike player Mohamed Moe Assad, well known for raging during streams, to say a homophobic slur. It was part of a larger defense smokescreen for MOE in the Counter-Strike community, with many of MOE's colleagues rushing to find inventive ways to rationalize the homophobic slur. Thorin's defense rested on the word's historical etymology, since the term once referred to a bundle of sticks. The modern use of the word is understood as an explicit slur against gay people, but in Thorin's mind, quote, "Tyrants who try to tell you a word only has the meaning they decided, even if they're making it up on the spot or ignoring cultural context and history, can still fuck off." This is part of a playbook that's much larger than Thorin and pervasive in today's culture wars. Accuse SJWs of tearing people down and use rhetorical escape hatches. Here, the possibility MOE meant the original use of the word to provide cover. By going on the offensive, there's a chance to shift the burden of proof onto the accuser, and because that proof would require knowing someone's true intent, it almost always falls short. And so the cycle continues until the next incident, which inevitably there is. In April, Thorin bemoaned the potentially disrupted career of Overwatch player Jonathan Dreamcapser Sanchez, who was fired from his team after credible allegations the 21-year-old had carried out an online affair with a 14-year-old. When someone pointed out he was a sexual predator, Thorin became aggressive. The connective tissue between all these incidents is bemoaning consequences for speech, wielding the rights of the First Amendment as an unyielding defense for what's really happening, criticism. Thorin has the right to make jokes involving race, but he doesn't have a protected right from people, employers, social networks, society, pushing back on it. Fans have also documented retweets related to the celebration of Joe Arpaio, a former Arizona sheriff, who proudly boasted of cracking down on illegal immigration by forcing, quote, "inmates to wear pink underwear and housing them in canvas tents under the hot Arizona sun." And he linked to an article about Swedish history from Return of Kings, an infamous anti-feminist website. I was not able to independently verify those last two retweets, as they did not show up in a search of Thorin's account. The account linking the Return of Kings article has been suspended, which means any retweets have also been removed from the original timeline as well. Thorin also supported Gamergate, and the first guest on his interview series was Sargon of Akkad, an anti-feminist YouTube commentator who rose to prominence through Gamergate. Akkad deploys similar tactics to Thorin, distancing himself from the worst elements of the alt-right when it's convenient, even though his regular topics, feminism, Black Lives Matter, Islam, the rights of straight white men, are typically the ones dominating the alt-right. Thorin has, at various times, seen his career impacted by his comments. In 2014, Thorin was fired from OnGamers, an online esports publication, for saying an ableist word. That same year, he was fired from ESL right before a major event after making a series of disparaging comments about Poland and Africa on a stream. The response from ESL was pretty explicit, too. Quote, "ESL does not stand by or tolerate acts of racism, xenophobia, or other forms of discrimination, and does not wish to be associated or employ those who make such comments. We are deeply upset that a longtime member of the esports community would display such ignorance and make highly inappropriate comments about an entire nation." But despite these moments of condemnation and censure, the esports establishment has generally seemed to look the other way, knowing people will move on. When Thorin made one of his monkey-related comments, ESL's VP of Pro Gaming was asked for a response, but declined, saying it was, quote, "not my place to comment." 5 years later, though, and the ESL is the one hiring Thorin, who now seems to largely operate off Patreon backing and various freelance gigs he picked up, to a major event in New York. An event where one of the other Counter-Strike commentators will be Matthew Sadakis Trivet, who was suspended by Twitch for saying a racial slur during a live stream. I contacted ESL about Thorin's comments on Jones and his history of racial language, and they only reiterated their plan to work with Thorin next month. Quote, "Thorin is not an ESL employee and works as a commentator on a freelance contract for specific esports events. Therefore, he does not represent ESL in any way." He does represent ESL. He's going to be on their desk analyzing Counter-Strike matches. The employee distinction doesn't hold up. They can't completely wash their hands of this. The spokesman added one more thing. Quote, "We keep observing feedback."
Patrick, one of the ways I saw this piece characterized was as a hit job targeting someone whose politics and jokes you don't like. So let's start out by setting the table a little bit. You're not really someone who follows esports. So why did Thorin catch your interest, and why did you end up writing an article about him?
Well, I think there's all sorts of subjects that I don't consider myself an expert in, and like Twitter is a garbage fire for all sorts of legitimate reasons. But one of the things that I really like about it is that it allows me to like set up lists and follow folks that have expertises and interests in topics that I don't have the time or even inclination or need to go down, but I want to stay abreast of. You know, interesting stories can come from anywhere, and I'm always trying to, you know, Rob, I heard esports are a big thing, and so I probably shouldn't ignore them, even if at the end of the day I'm probably not going to become an esports reporter necessarily. But certainly part of my history has been sort of investigating personalities and high profile figures and sort of how they, and like even like more bigger picture is going into, I enjoy going into communities that I maybe don't quite understand, and from an outsider perspective, trying to wrap my head around it, because I think that can sometimes be useful to explain it to an audience that might be interested in a particular story, but because they're so separated from that community, they have no way of really parsing what's going on. And so a couple of days ago, I saw some tweets being surfaced by prominent esports reporters, prominent esports personalities, and specifically they were sort of condemning or dunking. There's sort of like a spectrum of how they were being treated. Of these tweets from, we call them Thorin or Shields? How do we want to rest? I called him Thorin in the article, but Shields,
yeah, you know,
is
it's
his proper last name, but he's
Shields
known
is
more
his proper
as
name,
Thorin.
But everyone calls him, like, it's esports, so everyone is known by their handle, but at the same time, like, I don't know. It's up to you, man. We can call him Shields.
Okay, we'll go with Shields. And so there were these, two tweets in which he was pretty prominently defending more Alex Jones's right to have provocative comments, which went far beyond that. He was really defending Alex Jones and the things he was saying, that which is separate from defending Alex Jones having the right to say something. He was essentially arguing, as we've been having this larger conversation in technology and culture, about what does it mean for places like Facebook or Apple or Twitter to consider like what speech they should or shouldn't allow the platform. And, you know, Alex Jones is not just a provocateur. You know, as in the tweet that I put out that got shared a bunch, it was, you know, he is someone who, like, most famously, I mean, among other things, has propagated an insidious lie that the 2012 mass shooting of 20 underage, you know, 6-7-year-old children was a complete facade. It was a false flag by the government, and the parents who are out there grieving are crisis actors who are hired to propagate this government lie, which it's a harmful thing that Alex Jones is being sued for due to some of the consequences, and it really bothered me. And so it bothered me the way he was pitching that. And then, you know, I thought it was just going to be, okay, I'm going to share this sort of like easy 9 a.m. like, this guy sucks, tweet, and just like move on with my life. I'm going to go stream Dead Cells or whatever. And immediately I got a bunch of responses from both fans and followers and folks that covered esports that, like, the culmination of it was like, oh, like, you've never heard of this dude? Like, whew, yeah, okay, well, that's, Alex Jones is just one part of a larger thing. And so within 30 seconds or so, just did like a quick Twitter search for like various keywords, like, you know, race and things like that, and came back and Gamergate and came back with a couple of tweets that showed like a larger body of rhetorical work that was disturbing, painted a pretty upsetting picture of the kind of things that this person said. And these were like recent things, right? Like, so this is, you know, not something necessarily 10 years ago. This is something that he was saying in April of this year, in July of this year, you know, like it's a very recent body of work. And so I put out those two tweets to kind of like create like a broader understanding of like maybe why this person, like, how does this person go? Is it just Alex Jones, or is it like part of a larger body of rhetoric? And those three tweets kind of encompass like a short version, which is, no, this is like a larger, you can see the beats along the path of why someone goes, someone says about X, there's a good chance they're going to say something about Y. And then I couldn't just kind of, I kind of couldn't let it go because it struck me as odd once I, as I was scrolling through his Twitter feed, I also noticed that he had said that he was going to be, he'd been hired to be an analyst at ELS, right?
ESL.
I was always getting those confused. ESL, which is a, you know, a prominent esports organization. They're holding a Counter-Strike tournament in New York in September, and he was going to be an analyst on one of their main desks. And, you know, my thought was like, that's seems. I mean, you know, every organization can make their own call, but that struck me as a little odd given his body of work. It wasn't just an Alex Jones comment; it was a whole body of like work that maybe might cause an organization to go, huh? And so I was curious about that and emailed a spokesperson and just asked, you know, I saw these tweets. Does ES, you know, do you have any comment on it? Does this have any impact on his standing at the event? And, you know, there's a quote at the bottom of the piece that they essentially say that because he is a freelancer and not an employee, that his comments do not represent them. And so that response is what then prompted me to think, okay, like maybe there's a story here. Like maybe there is a way where as an outsider, I can go in, you know, I want to make sure I do it right. I want to make sure that I'm doing my research. You know, you were a big help in consulting and helping me and guide me through this story. There were other folks in esports that had reached out with a couple of different things that like helped me have a broader understanding to see, you know, was I in the wrong for thinking this was odd? And the response I got from a lot of esports folks was like, no, it's just that it's become sort of accepted that this is the way things are. And so it's not my intention to like, you know, a hit job is a way of putting together a body of evidence of a person's rhetoric, because I thought it was surprising that someone who was this prominent, he was not on the edge, he's not on the fringes. This is someone who is center stage at an enormous tournament in New York, is doing these kinds of things. And so I thought it was worth pointing that out, especially for people who don't work or don't cover or don't follow esports. I found it surprising, and I thought other people would find it surprising too. And so often stories that I am tracking or looking into are, would the average person find this interesting? And would the average person who was not a part of this community find this interesting? And then so that is the long-winded version of explaining sort of how I arrived at writing that story. I guess just to conclude here, you know, the implication of the hit job comment is that it is a story written with the implicit intent of having someone like lose their career, lose their job. And that is not the case. You know, people can read into my intentions however they want. I try to chase interesting stories that I think people would find interesting. And the consequences of, you know, highlighting those actions are outside of my control.
Yeah, it's Thorin is an interesting case. Counter-Strike is kind of an interesting case, really, because I think like Shields is kind of a representative. Well, he's always been a bit singular as far as like being a personality. You know, he's often compared with and like identified with Richard Lewis, but I would argue there's actually a lot of differences between those two men, even though I think they are friends and they do tend to stick up for each other. Like Shields is kind of a different case, but what's interesting about the position Shields enjoys is that a lot of other esports have sort of tried to move beyond that brand of entertainer, that brand of analyst. Like, you don't find quite like to varying degrees of success, but in general, like the push from Riot, the push from Blizzard, you know, even within the FGC, there is at least an overall trend to trying to be like more inclusive, to try to find personalities and analysts and casters who don't have sort of a history of you know, edgelordy behavior or making like discriminatory or like super biased remarks. And Counter-Strike has kind of resisted a lot of those trends. And I think there's a couple things. One is that esports has always been kind of a good old boys club a little bit. Like, esports was very small. Like, a lot of these people go back, like, 10, 15 years in, you know, working together and, you know, getting to know each other. And so, you know, there's still this attitude that it's a small thing, right? It's just friends enjoying their weird hobby together, and why do we have to make it all corporate and PC? I think there's resistance to that. And I think in a weird way, there's this idea that people like Shields, and by extension events that showcase people like Shields, are more authentic. That it's real esports. It's not this like corporate commodified version of esports. It's like
these outsiders who came in with all the money.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's one of the reasons you know, guys like this tend to stick around, is because for a lot of people in Counter-Strike, and this is not universal, like there's a lot of Counter-Strike fans who cannot fucking stand that like Shields is one of the major faces of their game and their community.
Yeah, I mean, like one thing I'll say, this maybe could have been highlighted better in the story, and I will fault the story for not including this. Like, by all accounts, he is good at his job. That like one of the reasons he's being hired to be an analyst is that he's good at being a Counter-Strike analyst. Like, I think something that my story could have done a better job was pointing out that it's part of the reason this is happening is because like the pool of people available, he's one of the better ones to do this job. That doesn't mean, you know, part of the reason you would shift up that pool is to like let new people in and people who maybe are more considerate or considered of the language they're using. But like all things being equal, that stuff aside, like part of the reason he's hired is because like he is good at his job. And one of the things I wonder that you might have a better sense of, and maybe this is specific to Counter-Strike or more in esports in general, like we see stuff like this happen with a lot of different personalities. Like it's not just Counter-Strike. I think this is a lot of like folks who were like in their 20s or teens, like coming up through a scene that gets corporatized and money comes in and behavior doesn't necessarily evolve at the same pace that those things, those other walls kind of close around. And one, there's a resistance to that because like you're kind of like bucking the trend. And then two, how much do we fault organizations like this when like if this is the pool they're picking from, like is there another pool to pick from, right? Like is the choice for them, if you don't pick someone like Shields, it's like well then you're going to the B tier, C tier people, and like if you want quality commentary, like, you know, the pool you're picking from are people that have like baggage with them. I don't come to enough knowledge to know if that's true, but I wonder if part of the problem, and it maybe a self-reinforced problem due to the continued hiring of certain people, but, you know, when you're trying to fill a stage, it's like, okay, like, he's got a following. The fans that he does have, like, are very diehard. It's like, that's how you put, you know, people in seats, whether it's in a stadium or it's on Twitch.
Yeah, I think as far as the pool maybe not being as diverse or professionalized as, like, some organizations might prefer, I think there is an element. There's definitely that, you referred to that self-reinforcing aspect of this problem of, like, a community that has someone like Shields in it who is sort of setting the tone for like the discourse or the discussion in that community is going to end up being exclusionary because a lot of people are going to take one look at that and fuck off. Like there's going to be a lot of people who maybe, you know, would choose to pursue Counter-Strike either as players or as analysts or hosts who are going to basically bail because that community is like, clearly not making space for them because it's not going to have their back if it's also having the back of someone like Shields. There's another element of a lot of like what you call like the esports OGs is that they have mentored a lot of people. They have like fostered a lot of the up and coming talent at various stages of their career, which also creates this issue of, you know, it makes them extra influential because even a lot of those people you'd be pulling for, you know, the up and comers you'd be putting on these stages and giving these opportunities, a lot of them still like view themselves as beholden to a lot of the old personalities. And it's going to feel like sticking a knife in their back to turn around and say, well, you're right. We should probably ban them from this event. We should probably not have someone like this who says these things on our stage. And so it's a bit of like a, I don't know, it's like this constructed moral safe house is the way I'd put it, where because, you know, because they've been in the scene for so long, because they've been the one of the faces of that scene for so long, this is why people just sort of view it as a thing that can't be changed, right? This is why so many people in esports like came to you and were like, oh, you don't know about Thorin? Like, let me tell you about this fucking guy.
Right.
Because as far as like Counter-Strike goes, he's just like part of the furniture at this point. Like, yep, that's Counter-Strike and nothing to be done about it.
Yeah. It's that's what I found interesting as an outsider. Was the this thought that this observation I was having where things kind of seem to be stuck in place because, well, that's just the way things are. That's the way things have always been. And, you know, this was a pretty narrow story. It wasn't like a large, huge piece about like the state of the esports scene and sort of like the malaise that can happen in esports or at other places, right? I mean, you know, games journalism, games writing, like is, an, you know, a good old boys club. You know, it's gotten better. I mean, you look at the last 10 years and, you know, just the faces, you know, running different outlets and the staff underneath them has changed tremendously through like hard work and effort of a lot of folks. So it's certainly not exclusive to esports. It's more that, you know, as I mentioned, you know, earlier, like what attracted me was the sort of, I guess also what surprised me was the lack of, and this would be, you know, I could have plucked anyone, right? Like, Thorin is not, Shields is not exclusively the one person who has said incendiary and extreme rhetoric. It was, the thing that struck me was the doubling down. What struck me was the even lack of apologies that don't even necessarily ring true, but like the apologies you get because that's what happens with like the professionalization and corporatization of a certain sector, right? So like what struck me was, and you know, one of the things people pointed out was, you know, hey, like you wrote this tweet a couple of weeks ago, you know, about James Gunn, in which you said, well, people should be given room to grow and to change. And like that can happen, you know, whether you're going for your 20s to your 30s or your 40s to your 50s, like we need to make sure that we're allowing space for that. And I think part of Waypoint's mission is, you know, encouraging folks to do that. But what struck me about Shields was the lack of any of that, which is like when there was any sort of criticism of his language, about the racial coding, about, you know, the defense of a Overwatch player who had been credibly accused of, who's 21 and carrying on an online affair with a 14-year-old, the reaction was always to double down on being toxic about it, to not react with, oh, you know, right, you know, I should think about that, like, you know, this is from, there was a lack of introspection that I found to be troubling. And then that's ultimately what made me think it was worth highlighting. Because often in these spaces when folks are get onto the paid circuit, you know, what is drilled into you is like, you know, if you fuck up, like got to own the fuck up and then, you know, try and move past it. And, you know, what we kind of break down the piece, one of the things you and I and Austin, who also edited the piece, worked on was trying to explain some of the rhetorical tricks that people use that are not exclusive to Shields. This is something you see in Gamergate, in, you know, Trump supporters and in alt-right. Like there is a whole culture of using these sort of rhetorical tricks of it's, you know, you can apologize. That's one route, but also doubling down has its own advantages. You can cultivate a community based on that. And I mean, that seems to be what Shields has done. He doesn't apologize. He uses SJW as a pejorative. He is anti-PC culture. And like he checks a lot of the boxes that you might expect. It's just that a lot of those boxes tend to disqualify people from a certain type of job, and it hasn't for him. And so I thought it was interesting to sort of explore that, to try and understand sort of the history and trying to stack up, you know, a series of evidence that shows, you know, it's, you know, people screw up, make one-offs, but this was a sort of like a repeated pattern, and like the racial coding was a specific repeated pattern that fit within a larger set of rhetoric that, you know, is not unfamiliar. But again, like I found interesting as an outsider that was surprised that, like, oh, like, I wouldn't have been shocked. It was just like, oh, he just runs a Patreon and has, like, a YouTube channel. Like, that makes 100% sense. Like, that's a viable option for folks that want to build a community in that way. Like, they have options. But it was the fact that he was being employed by the professional scene. And it's, like, less than a specific indictment of, like, that event as much as, like, I just found it, yeah, interesting that there was the professional apparatus was continuing to be around him as opposed to just using your fans as, like, your base, your sole base of support going forward.
Yeah. Shields is interesting because, yeah, there's no shortage of people in esports who have said racist or somewhat bigoted things who have not fucked up that way in public. I think it is interesting the degree to which Shields rushes to, like, reliably rushes to the defense of absolute shitheels. I think it is interesting when someone, like, goes out of the way to be like, Alex Jones fucking rules. Like, today, like, right now, to be like, Alex right. Jones is awesome. I stand with him. He's a G.
Right. This is the hill I want to die on.
Yeah, like, this is a guy, and then he sort of hedges with that, like, obviously I'm not saying he's right about everything. You should always be critical of people. You're a free thinker. I'm a free thinker. You know, again, the rhetorical game. So he doesn't actually have to say, like, yeah, I think harassing the grieving parents whose toddlers were gunned down in an elementary school, I think that's awesome. He doesn't actually have to say that. He's just like, I love Alex Jones. Don't agree with him on about everything.
He's just asking questions.
Yeah, I leave it to you to decide what you
agree. Dear reader.
Yeah.
We report, you decide.
Right, and then there's the fact that, like, the thing that made him most upset when there was an Overwatch player you mentioned, like, was sort of caught sort of what looked like grooming a 14-year-old. What really pissed off Shields is that, well, now we wouldn't be able to see a great player. Right. Boy, doesn't this fucking suck. You know, real shame that we're just denied the treat of watching someone be really good at Overwatch, which is a wildly revealing thing to say about, like, your values, right? And, like, who you have empathy for.
And especially when someone points it out, right? Like, what's interesting about that specific exchange is, deep breath, you can see on some level how someone who is a huge fan, like, let's say of this specific player, we're like, I really like seeing them play. It upsets me that I'm not going to be able to see them at their best. Like, okay, maybe I can somehow compartmentalize that, I guess. But, like, when it's pointed out specifically, you know, I think the reply that got the response from was like, cough, sexual predator, you know. And the response to that is to then say, you know, fuck off or whatever it was. Like, we're missing out on great play. It's like, even when it's, like, specifically pointed out how you should be thinking of, you can have these two thoughts in your head at once, it's to the exclusion of one and to the prominence of another, which I think, like you rightly said, like, says a lot about a worldview. And, like, that specific exchange is one that a lot of folks, you know, in response to the piece, like, was like, oh wow, I wasn't aware of that exchange. And they found, and it seemed to be like a lot of people had just kind of, like, baked in certain elements of his character, but even that one they found to be particularly revealing or startling.
Yeah, and I don't think, like, part of Shield's brand at this point is his lack of accountability and culpability. That, you know, if you're someone who's a fan of Shield's, part of it is, like, how's he going to get away with it this time? And, like, surprise, right. He always does.
Right.
And he gets away with it in part because the esports ecosystem in which he operates tends to be somewhat immature and doesn't sort of really enforce standards of, like, decency or behavior, and two, that he has an aggressive fan base that tends to sort of brigade or swarm people who are critical of him. And this, again, is pretty common. There's a lot of figures in games and esports who operate like this, but definitely, like, Shield sort of wields and utilizes that sort of power.
It's a common tactic, right? Like, we've seen this a lot in the past where it's to your advantage to be aggressive because you put people on their heels, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, That's where you see, I don't know that he necessarily, this is a lot of what, you know, the communities around these people will do less than the figures themselves, but it's the function of brigading, the function of, like, amassing into someone's feed is a way of making them uncomfortable, of getting them to sort of walk away. It's a silencing tactic, and it can help prolong or help someone escape a situation where it's like, okay, well, if that person who's the person raising their hand saying, I think this is a problem, and then they get swarmed, well, especially if they're a woman, person of color, any sort of marginalized folk, like, there's a decent chance they're going to go, that's not worth it. You know, like, what do I have to gain from being the person that, you know, puts themselves out to the hive slaughter?
And you don't have to be the person who is leading these, or you're not out there, like, making a show of, like, being the field general for harassment campaigns. All you have to do is someone with a huge platform and a toxic following is to basically say, like, will no one rid me of this troublesome priest, right? And then, like, you watch the mob do its job. And
and like, as a public figure, and I've learned this in the past myself, where, like, you have to be mindful of having a following that is passionate and is going to take cues from you. And, like, in the past where, like, I've quote tweeted people and, you know, I can't think of a specific incident off my head, but there have been incidents in the past where, like, I've dunked on someone and then saw my followers go and do something where I was like, no, like, this is not what I meant for you to do. I was just kind of doing a one-off, and I don't need, you know, 50 people to go reinforce my point by yelling it at that person. And that was a situation where it's like, all right, delete the original tweet. Now tell everyone, like, hey, like, this was bad. Like, I can't control what you do, but, like, I want to make it clear, like, I don't condone these actions, and these do not represent me. Like, it's, you can't control everyone that's under your umbrella, but, you know, you can try and set an example, and you can try and speak to that and acknowledge that your actions do have ripple effects off, you know, into the nether realm. Whether, you know, you've dictated a certain action or not. And so it's incumbent on a public figure to, and most of these people know this, right? Like, this is public figure 101. Once you've amassed any meaningful following, you run into situations like this, and it is sort of incumbent on you to or to not engage. And usually if you don't engage with that, that is telling in and of itself.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So, like, last night, like, as we were kind of expecting, there was a bit of a backlash against you and against this piece. Not as much as I was expecting, but, like, still it was there. But what did catch me out a little bit was the fact that someone pulled old photos and captions of yours, and what the fuck, Patrick?
Yeah, not a great evening, I would say. So people found, like, an old image gallery from my college days, which at this point is 33, so, you know, 13, 14,
it's
15 years, depending on,
yeah,
depending on which year you want to pull. And it was just like a bucket of photo parties. The photos themselves are largely innocuous as drunk people at a party. But, like, the problem with the photos is the captions that I put on there. Like, there are misogynistic and racist edgelordy jokes that I don't have any excuse for. Like, they were wrong at the time. They are even worse in retrospect because of both shifts in culture and in my own personal growth. And plus, I take full responsibility for my past, present, and future self. But this is, like, one of those situations where there were other people in those photos. You know, my wife was in those photos. One of the photos, which has a deeply misogynistic joke, is, like, a photo of me and my wife. And, you know, we looked at those photos last night. She was like, yeah, that's bad. And we would talk, and I was like, yeah, we did some shitty things in college, and we talked about how, like, that caption made her feel, and we talked about other things that we look back at from those days and we regret. And more than anything, I remember when I saw those photos going around, I felt less of a sense of shame about, like, the person I was, because I feel supremely confident in the person I have become, and I think my journey is similar to a lot of folks. But was an embarrassment over how stuff like that could be used to undermine sort of Waypoint's mission, in which, you know, not everything we do is about, you know, these, like this article, like, you know, that I wrote about Shields. But, you know, as a general mission towards social justice and asking folks to be introspective and calling out bullshit, it's like, okay, well, here's an instance in which I was deeply insensitive for a whole host of reasons, and that could be weaponized in a way that undermines our values and what the site stands for and what it argues for. And so, like I said, I take full ownership of those photos. I'm deeply embarrassed and upset, but I also, as I was going to write a tweet thread, and then we decided we were just going to do this podcast, you know, the thing I was trying to put across in the tweets that I was putting together was that, like, it's easy to say you're sorry, right? Like to bring this into a larger picture of a conversation we're happening, like, professionalization of Patrick Klepek includes an apology for something like that coming out, like, regardless of what the person Patrick Klepek has become, right? Like, is that, oh, bad thing from your past, like, that makes you and your employer not look great, like, better put out that apology. And part of what I wanted to get across was, well, I hope what is demonstrated is through my actions, my reporting, my work, my personal relationships, that what I do and have done and the ways I've talked about that growth demonstrate actionably that change, rather than just being pushed into a corner and forced to apologize. Because I think there's a distinct difference between being pushed into a corner and just saying, I'm sorry. Because, like, what I'm not saying is that I, like, those jokes are inexcusable. Like, they're not humor that you don't get. It's not social justice warriors, demanding something from me. It's like, they're bad. Like, I didn't understand the power of language, of words, some of the relationships and racial dynamics of my roommates, of other people I was, were in my life at the time. And I understand that now. Like, my whole ass is out there in a way that is both embarrassing and somewhat relieving. As I mentioned before, like, what I hope to convey in this is a sense of, like, you can be upset, you can be offended, you can feel betrayed. I 100% understand why anyone would be like, motherfucker, like, how can you write a piece like that when you got that in your past? And I would still justify what I did. The piece I reported was, you know, as we mentioned before, it was the lack of, for Shields, the lack of contrition, the lack of introspection, the lack of realizing that those words have an impact on other people, on culture, on your followers, on you. And I hope I've tried to demonstrate over the years, as I've made mistakes, learned things, grown as a person, to try and take ownership of that past, to talk about that past. I've considered part of my personal brand to speak on those issues, to, like, own the fact that I was a shitty white boy in my teenage years, in my 20s. And there aren't excuses for that, but I can become a better person and try and demonstrate to other people that it's possible to become a better person without pretending that stuff didn't exist. So this is a moment where, confronted very publicly with past shame, like, why did you do those things? You know, why did you think those jokes were funny? What can you do about that? Like, I'm later today, my roommate, who was, you know, one of the jokes, you know, who came up in those photos, like, I'm going to reach out to him and be like, yo, like, I thought we could talk like that when we were roommates, and there's a good chance that you just went along with stuff like that and laughed because that's what you have to do when you are predominantly surrounded by white people. And I'm sorry. And if I didn't recognize that at the time, I do now. And that's on me. And, like, that's healthy. Like, yeah. Sometimes confronting your past is, I think, is helpful through I don't recommend it in this way, especially what, you know, watching embarrassing photos of my wife plastered around, you know, that's the stuff that really I can take the heat on things. You know, it's my family, friends, and people in my life who didn't ask for this is the stuff that really gets under my skin. But that's also why this happened, right? This is it's a bad faith attack that is, ignores the larger point of Waypoint's mission of what I was trying to say with the piece, what I've tried to say about myself and other things in the past. I think these things can all live alongside each other. I can have said awful things in my past and also still point out that people are saying awful things in the present. That was a long-winded answer to your question, but hopefully I touched on at least a number of topics.
Yeah, the bad faith argument is that, like, catching you with something like this exposes, like, a fundamental hypocrisy, right? Like, there goes Klepek, like, castigating right. people's views he doesn't like for making, like, racist and misogynist jokes, but turns out he had no problem making those jokes, and yet, right. you know, because right. he's on the SJW side, we're supposed to forgive him and condemn them. But, like, when I see these attacks, and, like, they basically follow script at this point. Like, we've seen, like, a million versions of this. Right. But I've always found them, like, really revealing because I think there is a genuineness to them that reveals, like, some fundamental things about the reactionary worldview,
yeah.
Which
no,
is
you're right. Yeah.
That like secretly everyone basically agrees with them, and anyone who doesn't like is only pretending to virtue. And it's important to like create that framework because then everyone gets a pass from like any kind of like standard of decency or like polite behavior, right? Like go ahead, be racist because everyone else already is. And they're just being dishonest about it, which is more right. contemptible. And then the second thing is, I think it's a way to, like, it's a way to trap people who are, like, maybe borderline, right? Like, attacks like this are, like, about annihilating the possibility of, like, change or growth. Like, because right. It might sound hollow for you to sit here today and be like, well, you know, obviously I've grown and I've changed.
Right, because I didn't disclose this. It was exposed, and then I'm reacting to it.
Right. Well, I mean, in your defense, I will say, like, I was talking to my partner last night. I was like, Patrick's been upfront that he was a shitty dumbass in college. Like, you've always referred, I think, obliquely to both these photos and sort of the worldview you had back then that led to it. Like, you've always been clear that, like, you couldn't vouch for your behavior as a teenager and a young man.
Right.
But like this attitude that like people can't grow and improve, right? Like this the attack is if someone ever did something like this or ever said something like this, that's who they are forever and all time, right? They can't evolve beyond it, they can't grow beyond it. And that's useful because like it invalidates anything that someone who does try and change and like become a more compassionate person invalidates anything they have to say, because fundamentally you're making the argument that like, well, marked for life, like we saw your true colors, you know, right. back then, everything else there is just like you learning to wear a mask. And then it's telling everyone like in that sort of reactionary camp or like trying to figure out what they think about all this, that this is like, again, if you've said or done anything like this, if you thought anything like this, if you laughed at a shitty racist joke at some point, that's who you are forever and all time. And you're better off accepting it and defending it, defending yourself on those grounds rather than ever questioning it or trying to change, because you can't leave. You know, any attempt to try and become a better person, a more compassionate person, a more empathetic person, all you're really doing ultimately is compounding the sin of prejudice or bigotry with the sin of hypocrisy. And I think that's the function these attacks, like these attacks serve two functions, right? One is to like discredit a report like this, a reporter like you. But I think the other thing that's very true is, like, these attacks are also about kind of locking the door behind the people who, like, maybe kind of sort of agree with you, right? Like, kind of foreclosing the possibility that they can think twice and say, like, do I want to continue going down this road? Do I really want to stand with the guy who's pissed that the Overwatch sexual predator isn't going to get to make, like, sweet plays anymore? Is that who I want to be with? And these attacks are always about being like, oh, you don't have a fucking choice. You're stuck with us now.
Yeah, I mean, that's the, you know, the whole line of ethics in games journalism is, like, that's, it's the same thing. It's trying to trap people into a rhetorical sort of, like, playing field in which you could, you can see people going, oh, well, like, I've seen this in, you know, I largely tried to avoid Twitter. I finally put on the quality filter, which I didn't realize how well that works.
Dude,
actually.
That thing's awesome.
Twitter, you know, Twitter's bad, but that thing manages to work through, like, bot spam in a way that I didn't quite realize for the scale of, like, how these sort of, like, swarm attacks work. But, you know, I saw people, you know, the thing I will do every once in a while is when I'm, like, going through and at least going to, like, try and mute some people and some conversations that don't get caught by the quality filter, I'll click on profiles to see if they follow me. Now, there are plenty of people who follow me in bad faith because they're just trying to find some gotcha thing to spring on. But there are a lot of people who there were at least a fair number of people who I saw whose, like, response was like, I'm really disappointed. Like, what's up with these pictures? And they followed me and I would check their follower list. And, like, there weren't any immediate red flags that suggested they were just in because they're, you know, you'll get folks who attempt to portray themselves as a fan to try and trick you into talking to them or saying something or private messaging or whatever. Like, there are a lot of tricks that people will lay out for you, but, you know, there were a handful of them and I didn't respond because I was waiting to do this. But, there were those people who were like, well, on one hand, but on the other, like, what the fuck, man? And so, like, and I get it to some degree because you see how it works, right? Like, I understand stepping back why someone would look at those two and go, well, I don't, who cares what he just reported out? Like, why should I believe anything that he says? And it comes down to what you're saying, right? Like, it's, do you believe people can grow and change and become more empathetic? Or, as the argument from a lot of these bad faith attacks goes, the general premise of their argument is it's all virtue signaling. It is all, as you said, a mask. It is all people. People are who they are. They are racist. They are sexist. They are whatever. There is some, I don't know when it locks in. Like what age, like, you just become you.
I think it's like a baby duck. Like, you just see a racist joke and it's part of you forever. And you're like, mother.
But, you know, if you carry their logic to its conclusion, it's that at some point you were just sort of locked into place as a person. And that anything you do that deviates from that default position is you trying to just get into polite society. It is you trying to virtue signal your way into different company. It is you putting on these masks because it is advantageous to your career. And, you know, are there people that do that? Like, probably. But, you know, hopefully the way I talk about myself, the way I try to be very personal with my audience is, like, the value of authenticity, well, it's in the eye of the holder. Like, you either think I'm authentic or you don't. And so my only way to cut through all of that noise is to explain who I am, how I got there, what I do. And if that's not enough for you, then okay. Like, maybe we part ways. Like, that's unfortunate. I, you know, sort of disagree how we got there. But, like, the most I can do in this situation is both own up for it and try and convey, you know, my own life story. And then, like, you know, what am I supposed to do? I'm not going to convince that one side because they don't want to be convinced. They just want the ammunition so they can try and convince the people who are waffling in the middle or don't have enough evidence or aren't paying attention that closely or genuinely maybe just don't understand. I don't know. So it's I'm not the first. I'm not the last. And we were saying to my wife last night, you know, I want to make it clear. I'm not trying to, you know, string together a woe is me story, but I was like, this is why people don't do this, right? Like, this is why, like, again, with, like, we were talking before about, like, you know, why raise your hand? Like, who did anyone, win in this scenario, right? There's no win. Like, there wasn't a win state for writing the article, but, like, I mostly just lost, I guess. Like, I considered a win because I felt like I was writing something that was worth pointing out that was, like, people should know more about. So I do consider that a win, but, like, you can see how, you know, one of the things I got from a lot of folks after I published a story was I got a lot of private messages from women in esports who cover this and went, you know, thank you. Like, I can't write about this kind of thing. This is, you know, this not just Shields or just this topic because it's too destructive to my life, my well-being, my mental health. And so thank you for doing that. This is before it all took a real sideways turn, but, you know, that goes to show, like, the sideways turn is evidence of, you know, why a lot of people don't poke the hive, because mm-hmm. the hive is going to punch back. And they are going to find something, because at the end of the day, everyone has something to hide. You know, you can't completely clean up your past, no matter, you know, what you do. You know, given the situation I'm in, I hope that this podcast and this part of the podcast at least been illuminating for at least my side in it, my part in it.
Yeah, I last night when this sort of emerged, I was thinking back to this is a few months ago. God, I think it was like 8 months now in the past. But like you, me, and Austin were sitting around the office. It was like a rainy day in New York, and we were talking about, like, I was explaining like why I didn't enjoy esports as much as I used to, mm-hmm. and why I certainly didn't enjoy covering it as much anymore. And for me, there were two things, and the things I brought up that day were, like, one, like, any story about esports culture, competition, just ends up being this, like, complete fucking rabbit hole that you have to go down before you can write about a topic.
Yes.
Like, the amount of, like, there's so much important stuff, like, hidden on wikis, forum threads, Reddit threads, old streams. And you have to have a command of just about all of it, or else you're going to get, like, well, actually to death. And, but the other major part of it, I think, is that, and this is what I said that day, I was like, you know, there's huge swaths of esports where reactionary politics and toxic assholes are basically the norm. And, like, it's a shitty environment to go work in. It's a kind of a joyless thing to end up covering.
Yeah, and the actual reporting part of it, you know, the thing that you mentioned before is totally right, where I was, you know, often actively relying on the reporting, the collection of reporting from others, because the alternative was like, hey, go listen to this like 4.5 hour live stream to like find this like 45-second clip, which is what you're actually looking for. And like, it's, I think part of the reason it's like a difficult thing to cover in, or esports is a difficult thing to cover. I'm sure this is also true for folks that more actively cover like Twitch and YouTube culture. Like, this is all mm-hmm. true, is that the advent of long form video in which it becomes extremely difficult to get documented evidence of a thing, because video is just not conducive to that sort of scrubbing in the same way that the written word is. You know, you can scan 10,000 words a whole lot faster than you can scan, you know, a 6 hour video. That ends up leaving a lot of things on the table because they are just squirreled away in which it's just extremely difficult to actually do the work, because the it's so bulky, it's so unwieldy, and there aren't that many tools in order for you to like make good on it. You know, I mean, you can turn on closed captioning in YouTube, I guess, to try and, you know, there are, you know, tricks, but it's really difficult. It's a huge lift. And and again, like, you combine that with the response that you're normally going to get, it's like, okay, well, maybe I'll just go back to covering that match and do a profile of that cool player, because then I can go out on Friday night and feel okay.
Yeah. And it's so weird to like talk about some of this stuff, because I started joking around with you as we were coming to the end of working on this piece, where like after a while you start to sound like you start to feel like you're one of those people in like a horror movie or a suspense movie who's like, no, this is fucked up. Like, nobody sees it, but like, this is fucked up. We're like,
yeah, I've got the red strings up, like pointing to 900 different things. Like, no, but if you just look at all, way all these things connect, then you'll see why, you know, check this YouTube video and then check this Twitch embed and then check all these tweets and then check this podcast. And it's like, then it's all going to make sense.
Yeah. You end up an example that you bring up in the piece is, you know, Thorin's beef with Andy Dinn over at Team Solo Mid, and sort of comparing him, joking that like he's like Caesar from Planet of the Apes. And it's like, out of context, that like comes across as kind of innocuous, right? But like, you have to watch the video and like get what was the vibe of the conversation around that point. But then also you need to know about like, there's this like racist meme in League of Legends, and like, okay, so Wukong is this hero, it's the ape hero, and
he's the one, and he plays that hero, and it's a meme that he looks like that character, and then also you have to connect this to previous jokes that he's used in which he specifically invokes monkeys and compare them to black people, and it's like, okay, then you put that all together, and you're like, okay, you see how isolated incidents add up to something larger, but to get there was a tremendous amount of work, and also it's a tremendous amount of mental work for any reader as well, right? Like you're asking, you have to show the work in order to, you can't just say, you know, blank, you know, person is X. It's like, I need to show you how I arrived at that analysis. And you can deviate along the way, but at least let me show you why I think this, you know, concludes in this fashion. So,
right.
Yeah. It does make you feel like you're a Alex Jones conspiracy theorist. To bring a little full bit, circle. Yeah. Sometimes.
So, yeah, like, overall, I have to say, though, I think you did a great job with this, and it was, like, really eye-opening for me because I am just enough of someone who, like, is immersed in esports or was immersed in esports to adopt a lot of the point of view, like, from people on the inside of esports where it's like, yeah, that's Thorin, just being Thorin, like, no news there, like... Oh, of course he loves Alex Jones. That's not weird. That's just the air we breathe in esports.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, your friend that, you know, cracks, you know, shitty jokes and all your friends roll their eyes and go, oh, well, that's Joe, you know. No one wants to, it's not
There's
worth
There's Patrick captioning his funny photos.
God damn it.
Yeah.
God damn it.
But it's useful to have that outside perspective come in and be like, you realize this is deeply fucked up and weird, right? Like, most places, most people wouldn't be down with this. And it's weird that y'all just view this as part of the scenery. It was very, like, helpful and illuminating to me to, like, have you come in, like, write this piece and, like, just sort of break it down. Like, oh, yeah, this is a weird fucking track record at this point. And it's strange that this is a leading commentator on... like one of the major esports right now.
Yeah, I would hope that'd be as you open to the top, you know, asking about like, oh, it's a hit job. You know, what I would say is the agenda of the piece, if it had any, was exactly what you just said there, was, you know, pointing out, asking the question like, this is a little strange, right? Like, and that's where my outsider part came in, was like, looking at all this in totality, looking at all this holistically, like, I looked at it all and just went like, something's a little off here, right? And, you know, you can draw your own conclusions, you know, based on, you know, your own connection to esports and, you know, what should or shouldn't happen to a person. But, you know, my only goal was to inform that question, to answer like that query I had, which is like, this seems a little bit weird. And I think the piece at least accomplishes the mission of, this seems a little bit weird. And again, like the result of that may be like, yeah, that's just because that's the scene. The scene is weird.
Yeah.
And this is unavoidable. And that's the way it is. Like that may also be the reality, and that none of this really changes.
That is what I expect, until it's like, to be honest.
It's probably a generational shift, right? Like this is probably something that gets better marginally over time as new folks come in, especially in scenes where you're not going to have a heavier hand, right? Like you don't seem to see, like if Valve came in and said like, nah, you know, like there would be change, but Valve doesn't like to come in and say anything. Whereas, you know, you've seen, you know, like with S.H.I.E.L.D. specifically, like he's been sort of run out of different games, right?
Yeah.
Like he by all accounts, you know, doesn't do things with Riot and Blizzard anymore,
right,
so far as I can tell. And so, you know, if other folks don't want to get involved, then, you know, the community is sort of forced to either ask for that change, or change will just come one way or the other. You know, I mean, I guess full circle with my own change, it's like, but it's like, you know, do you want that change? You know, is that change earned? Or if you're happy with the status quo, then the status quo, you know, will continue, because that version's a hell of a lot easier.
But it will define you.
Yep.
All right. You can read Patrick's piece at waypoint.vice.com, as well as everything else we write. Our thanks, as always, to Bowen for his track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. You can follow me on Twitter at Rob Zachney. Patrick, where can people find you?
You can find me eventually.
Not this week.
Returning to twitter.com. That James Gunn tweet was tweeted 40,000 times, and that disappeared in 48 hours. So fortunately, the weekend is upon us. I will be forced to watch my kid, who every time I bring out my phone, she goes, photo, photo, which means I have to look at photos and not look at Twitter. So I have my safety lock in my daughter, who if I take out my phone, then I have to look at photos of her with her for the next 10 minutes. I guess the last thing I would say, if people have questions, if they want to talk about all of this with me, like, you know, part of what I have always tried to do in the past is, like, I'm a pretty open book. You know, my DMs are closed on Twitter right now because people were swarming them with really grotesque images that had nothing to do with me, and we'll just leave it at that. You know, my email is patrick.klepik@vice.com. You know, if you want to talk, want to reach out, or send me a private message on our forums do private messages? I think so, yes. Reach out. You know, I'm willing to have a conversation, especially if you were upset about what happened. I'm there. I'm not disappearing. I'm just briefly disappearing from Twitter until I write about The Walking Dead, and then probably tweet about that later today. So,
all right.
Anyway,
we'll be back next week with Waypoint Radio. Until then, for Patrick Klepik, I'm Rob Zachney, wishing you a good weekend. One where you are extremely offline.